Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We're doing it on Thursday, early afternoon on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast this week in LA. Joining me from New York City is the curator of the Bontemps poll, which we are celebrating today, Tim Bontemps.
Straw poll day, baby. Big day.
It's the Bontemps straw poll, the BS poll.
I've encouraged branding on this poll, and I am advising him to call it the Bontemps poll. That's all I'm going to say. Joe Lunardi has bracketology. There's no reason why Bontemps can't have the Bontemps poll. Joining us from Dallas, he's a little under the weather, but persevering. God love you, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I'm appearing on this podcast despite skipping my first called in sit game in a while last night, but I can't miss Bontemps straw poll pod.
You missed an incredibly rare game, that Cavs Mavericks game on Wednesday night, where the Cavs actually got scoring from their starting wings. And
of course, we're
like
opening this straw poll time talking about Windows' favorite team, the Cavaliers.
About MVP candidates. Let's get to Lamar Stevens.
Let's get to Lamar Stevens, baby.
All right. So without further ado, the first, is there a plan for three MVP polls?
Yeah, that's the plan. The first of three.
And very quick on the methodology here, Bontemps talks to 100 likely voters. So it is the exact same. It's not a projection. I mean, it is, I guess, a projection.
The goal is to replicate the voting pool at the end of the season. Talk to a couple people from every market. Talk to some international people. Talk to national people. Try to give as best of a look at the moment as we can of what the MVP race looks like.
You talk to broadcasters. You talk to writers. You talk to radio people. Domestically, internationally, which makes up the pool. Will this be the exact 100 voters? No, probably not, but it will probably be somewhere in the range of 85-ish% of the voters. And so therefore it has proven to be extremely accurate. All right, Bontemps, let's start from the back of the poll and move forward. We weren't going to belabor too much on the guys at the back, but I always think it's interesting about who showed up on the ballots. Please commence.
The amusing part of the one famous argument that we've had on the spot about the poll is that Brian is by far its biggest proponent. So I appreciate all the nice words about it.
I see all these people, you know, with all due respect, I've been a part of this doing stuff like this in the past. Like, who's your top five in the MVP? Well, my top five is blah, blah, blah. Well, what's about your top five? What's your MVP letter? My MVP letter is blah, blah, blah. Look, we're guilty here of all filling.
First of all, you don't ever do anything like that because you refuse to make any kind of proclamation or prediction on any front.
Saying, this isn't a prediction. It's an actual readout of the way people are thinking. That's great. All right.
More window pontificating. All right, here we go.
Immense.
13th place, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Got one vote. Thunder guard.
It's hard to
Royce
get
Young
votes.
Still has a vote.
It was not a team employee vote.
Okay.
Not a team employee vote.
Going to be a first-time All-Star, not an MVP on a losing team. Go ahead.
Right.
12th place, handful of votes. Lakers forward / center now, Anthony Davis.
Surprisingly low. Yeah, surprisingly low.
Sub 500. That, you know, can't be sub 500 in MVP.
I would say he's surprisingly low based off the amount of attention that the Lakers get and have gotten nationally and the amount of people who have said, oh, maybe AD is an MVP candidate. His team's under 500. They're barely in the play-in mix. He had a good month. He was off the radar before that. I'm not surprised he was this low.
Yeah, he's playing really great. He's not a serious candidate for MVP right now.
But this is also the reason why I think this poll is instructive to your point, because if you just, the general chatter has been Anthony Davis is a real candidate. I think this would show he is not.
Well, look, if he plays this way for three more months and the Lakers finish sixth, then we might have a different discussion. And there's more polls that will come out. Here we are now. He's in 14th. That's properly rated. Move forward.
Actually, he's in 12th, but there you go.
12th. Sorry.
Move forward.
Move forward now.
We're trying to keep it rolling.
In 11th place, a handful of votes also. Cleveland Cavaliers guard, Donovan Mitchell.
lit up the Mavericks on Wednesday night for a rare road win for the Cavs.
Just not as big of an MVP candidate on his team as Lamar Stevens. In 10th place, guy we talked about a lot in the straw, not Jared Allen, guy we talked about a lot in the straw poll the past couple of years in particular, Philadelphia 76ers center, Joel Embiid.
Let me step in before you go crazy. It is early and he has missed several games. Also, I think he had a 53-point performance after most of the votes were in.
It was Sunday night as the voting was taken off.
So right.
There were definitely a couple people as this went along who were like, hey, can I move Joel up a couple spots? Can I get Joel on the list?
I would say that is 10 with an arrow pointing up, up, up. And I would be, if he stays healthy, I would be very surprised if he's not a serious candidate.
So I would, before Brian gets into his campaign manager mode as Joel's biggest supporter in the MVP straw poll, what I would say, I would echo your point. If you look at the way Philadelphia season has gone, even if you set aside Joel's missed a little bit of time with injuries, it was also a very disappointing start for the Sixers, right? They're 1-4. They've hovered around 500. They had Tyrese Maxey and James Harden out for a long period of time. They were very up and down. Joel is playing out of his mind. And they're on an upward trajectory as a team. And again, I feel like, you know, we could get into this more as we get later into the poll. If you go back and look at prior first editions of this poll, like last year, Steph had 94 of 100 first place votes in the poll that came out in December, and he finished sixth, right? So there's time for people to move up the list.
And if you recall at that point, Wendy not only declared it, no question, that Steph was going to win the freaking MVP.
I would never say that. He was lobbying
for the trophy to be named after him at that point. He was making the Steph Curry Award.
Now I know you're full of it. I would never say something in December.
Right, go ahead, Brian. Floor is yours.
I agree that the voters probably had to wait until Embiid had 53 on Sunday before voting him, because it had been like 3 weeks since he had 59. So I'm going to give those voters who didn't think he was capable of scoring 50 a pass. And again, my thing on Embiid from 2 years ago was not that Embiid was more deserving than Jokic.
We're back to this again, McMahon.
He shouldn't have been disqualified because he sprained his ankle. That's my point. That was always my point.
Let's not rehash that again.
We get back to a similar thing you like to do in the past where you act like people are singling out Embiid or some other candidate. This is a pretty loaded field, as we're going to see as we go up the list. So I don't really think it's crazy that Embiid is 10th. I also think it's very possible that the next time we do this, he's easily in the top five.
Without double checking, I'm not sure on AD. I think Embiid might have missed more games than anybody else on this list, which is that's the only reason he's 10. If he'd played every game, one, the Sixers record would be a lot better, and two, he'd be much higher on this list. He's missed, I think, 8 or 9 games. Yeah. In a small sample size.
You sprain your ankle and you can't win the MVP. That's been well established. He's averaging 34, 10, and 5. I realize.
What's the best ability? Availability.
I think anybody with a functioning cerebellum knows that he ain't 10th. Okay? All right, go ahead.
I don't even know what a cerebellum is.
Well, you don't have one. A functioning one, anyway. In 9th place... slightly more votes than Embiid, but still pretty far down the list. Suns guard, Devin Booker. Another example of the timing of this being a factor, because if this had come out, say, 3 days later, I don't know if he'd have gotten any votes.
Well, he tweaked his hamstring, so right off the page. Not allowed to win.
I meant more because of the combination of the Suns falling off a cliff at the same time. So
I was going to say,
off a cliff because he's hurt.
They started falling off that cliff before he got hurt.
You're right.
I'm saying if it had come out a week earlier before they lost, I believe, 5 in a row, then he would have been.
He might have been 4th or 5th. Right. Yeah, for sure.
By the way, in my ballot, which I submitted to Bontemps, Booker and Embiid were in the top 5. You know, I don't know anything about the NBA, so I'm clearly out of touch because these guys finished ninth and 10th. I clearly have no clue what's going on.
Nobody gets more fired up about a nice December straw poll than.
Here's the other thing I'm going to say about this too, McMahon. When I ask people for this, for these polls, you know, I text a bunch of people. Hey, can you send me this? You, McMahon, you send me yours immediately. It's like, oh, here's my picks. I get it within 30 seconds. Usually. All right. No, McMahon's thinking. I asked Brian. Brian goes, oh, God, I got to come up with this list. Oh, I got to think about it. Oh, I don't want to do this.
Why would you say this? You're undercutting your own list here. If you're saying, yeah, this is just flip it, nobody care. I'm here arguing that it's meaningful. And you're like, people.
No, my point is you're acting. You say these things like, oh, I can't believe somebody doesn't have Joel Embiid on their ballot when you are hemming and hawing over who to pick because it's a hard list to pick from. So that's my point. That's a deep field.
Again, I'm just saying he's not 10th. By the way, Devin Booker, 27 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds.
Yeah, everybody on this list has bonkers stats.
There's a lot
look
of
at
guys
Shea's
for
stats.
Massive
Shea's
numbers,
stats like, are bonkers on a team that should have like 5 wins.
Yeah, like every guy above Booker on this list has absolutely insane numbers. Insane.
It's a loaded list. All right. In 8th place, first time in an appearance in the straw poll, as was Shea. Pelicans forward, Zion Williamson.
And where are they in the standings?
They are now first in Western Conference standings.
Tied for first. And so if they're tied for first and Zion's going to put up the kind of numbers that he is, then he's going to have to be an MVP candidate. Now, the sportsmanship award, I tell you what, really cost himself a chance at that sportsmanship award with that 360 windmill on the Suns that Chris Paul, the king of all sports.
It's the Joe Dumars award, right?
Yeah.
Can I just tell you this?
It ain't ever going to be named after Chris Paul either, because I was there when Chris Paul had garbage time layup that Dame Lillard got pissed off about. So Chris Paul crying about unwritten rules violations is pretty hilarious. But
how many different arenas have there been bleep Chris Paul chants in his career?
I would say 30 because it's included the ones he's played at when he hasn't played there.
Yeah, it's
well, there's only 29 arenas, but yeah. Well, there's been new and old arenas, maybe more than 30.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you count old
arenas that have been reduced to rubble where that's echoed.
Zion's playing at the level we all thought he could if he got in shape, if he got healthy, and the Pelicans are not just winning, but tied for first in the league. So, you know, he's going to be in this mix.
Yeah, I was going to say, like Joel Embiid, Zion to me is a candidate here that's got real upward mobility going forward. So the Pelicans, obviously, they've been on a hot streak lately. They've won a bunch of games to move up the standings right as the poll was happening. But if they stay atop the Western Conference for the next 5 or 6 weeks before the second round of this thing comes out, I think there's a really good chance he's way higher because you've got this is, as we know, a narrative award. There's going to be a real push because Zion is obviously great and he's the new kid on the block and the Pelicans would be surprising. And, you know, as we all know, when the guy is on the court playing, he's a human highlight factory.
Well, and if there was a comeback player of the year, he'd be the runaway favorite for that, which we are. The NBA is adding new awards. They have the Jerry West Clutch Award right now, which I'd like to point out is a blatant
ripoff. Let's have a 30-second timeout.
Yeah, timeout. I was waiting for this to come up.
30-second timeout. First off, let me just say I'm in L.A. this week to do NBA Today in studio. They brought the awards in on Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday, the actual physical awards. I have seen some people make fun of the design of the awards. And I kind of looked at it and was like, I don't know if that looks like a basketball award. I was sort of like, I didn't have a comment.
They've got a little bookend type of feel to them.
Fair. Seeing them in person, they are more impressive in person. I'm not going to get into the artistic stuff that I don't understand. They are more impressive in person. Having said that, McMahon, when I saw the Jerry West Clutch Award, I mean, I thought there was talk about tampering.
Copyright infringement, baby.
Listen, I just want, what's that deal that the old St. Louis Spirits owners got? I want if you cut me that sell check, the I'll shut up about the bonus factor.
Listen, at minimum, instead of the coaches deciding who votes on this award, I think it should be Ben McMahon, panel of one, tells the NBA, here are the clutch players of the year, and then that's who we vote on.
Well, in fairness to them, the reason the cojones factor is a thing is because you guys were slamming on Kyrie Irving way back when. And I had to, say, look, this guy just hit a game winner on Christmas coming off a championship winner. So you can't name an award after Kyrie Irving.
Test the wind on that one. I think that came back around to me. Okay. I think.
Little story time here. The best was when McMahon created his own logo for the cojones factor, which was two basketballs going through a net in such a way that they had a certain.
I believe McMahon's IT director was the one who created that logo, yes. Which was a fantastic job.
My IT director, interior designer.
They had a certain resemblance to anatomy. And he was told, we won't get into the details, you know what? That doesn't really follow with company, standards and policies. So, okay, he got rid of that. And then for a short time, he did the pod. But behind him, he had a mini basketball hoop with two basketballs.
No, I never put it in the background. I sent you guys a picture with it.
Oh, yes. My head
couldn't
was
get
in the
background.
Well, we wanted it in the background. That's what we wanted.
Winhorst definitely wanted it in the background. There's no question about that.
It would have been like an iconic troll, but apparently.
By the way, before we did this podcast, Wendy said, I don't want you to take forever to get to the top three. And here we are.
All right. How many ballots was Zion Williamson on out of 100?
He was on 23.
Okay. This is one thing that's going to be that Bontemps is going to touch on as poll goes along. I think the upward mobility of these guys in this poll, Zion here in mid-December is on 23 ballots. I think if we retook the poll now a week later, he would be on more than that. So think about, what is he, an eighth?
Yep.
Think about how not even on a full quarter of the ballots. Okay. Seventh place.
Yep. All right. In seventh place on 23 ballots, also just ahead of a couple points ahead of Zion in the voting. Nets forward, Kevin Durant.
Also upward mobility, big time. I mean,
I disagree on that.
I don't, dude. The Nets are 17 and 12 now.
Like, I
as
know,
messy but, as it's been, but, they're sitting
but
in
still,
fourth
that's underachieving.
Place in the Eastern Conference.
I don't,
that's underachieving.
Well, yeah. They've won 8 out of the last 10.
Here's the thing.
Like they got off to a terrible start. He's putting up insane numbers.
How are you defining upward mobility, McMahon?
I think that if they keep winning like they have been winning, and they're going to sit there and be a top three maybe team in the Eastern Conference, and he's going to be among the scoring leaders on crazy efficiency and putting up all kinds of other numbers, I think he's going to have to be seriously considered.
I don't think Kevin Durant can win MVP this year.
Why? Because
I think there's
people's feelings are hurt.
I think there's too much negative noise around the Nets. I think there's too many lingering feelings about the summer. And to me, when I had to say upward mobility for people, like I think there's a world where Embiid could in theory win. I think that's a small chances here, but I think it's possible. I think Zion has a chance to win. I think I agree with you with the way Durant's playing. He's been incredible. He's only sat out one game and it was for rest. I just think it's going to be hard for him to overcome the noise around the Nets.
If people are,
whether that's fair or not is another thing.
If people are factoring in a trade request that didn't happen, like why are your feelings hurt about that as a voter? What do you care?
But that's a fair point, but you're right, McMahon, and you're right, Bontemps. It does, for some reason, it does matter.
I'm only talking from a narrative standpoint. Look, I'm with you. If Durant plays 80 games and the Nets are good, like he's going to be right in the mix for me in terms of voting. I just don't see him getting enough. I just don't see him moving far up enough unless they get even higher up the standings than they are.
Fair or not, narrative matters in this award. You can argue whether that should be the case, but it exists. All right. Sixth place,
30 ballots. Again, handful of points ahead of Durant and Zion. These guys are all bunched from 6th to 8th. Grizzlies guard, Ja Morant.
Now, this is an interesting one because he is playing very well. He missed a couple of games due to injury. So,
can we stop with the injury thing every time?
Well, it keeps showing up in the results, so I can't stop. But they are in really good position in the Western Conference. They've been winning despite having significant injuries. Bane is looking at being out, you know, multiple months. This is a guy who should absolutely be seriously in the conversation. And him being in sixth right now, I don't know what that says.
It says he's in the conversation. He is in the conversation. And they're tied for first in the West, despite the fact that their starting five has yet to play 1 second together this year. Between, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. missing the first 16 games, Bane has been out since just before Jackson, you know, made his debut this season. And they're just zooming right along at 18-9.
Well, and they're another team where, again, like the Pelicans, if they're in first or second place for the next 6 weeks, he's probably going to get more support because a guy like, you know, Devin Booker will probably not get votes next time if the Suns are sitting around 500. Some of these other guys will start to fall off as the year goes on. As you'd expect, the list gets shorter because people sort of firm things up early on. There's things are a lot more wide open.
This is the first guy I think it would take something outrageous for Zion to get in there. And Embiid, you know how I feel. This is the first guy I think we've got who I think actually, you know, can win it at sixth right now. Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritty top five. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofer, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
All right, five players got a first place vote, each of the top five guys. First up from that list in fifth place, one first place vote. Was on 62 ballots. The two-time reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic.
And look, it's not fair, but Jokic is going to have the best season of his career to really have a chance.
Yeah, this is because the same thing as Durant in different form.
And well, the reason part is this, because the three straight MVPs is you know, I believe Larry Bird. Is he the only or just the last?
He is both. I don't remember if he's the only guy, but this is Jokic winning twice in a row. There's been nine instances of a player winning both two MVPs in a row. Some guys have done it twice, like LeBron, since Larry Bird won three in a row. None of them have won a third MVP trophy in a row.
Yeah, so call that voter fatigue or just people uncomfortable putting a guy in that historical category who hasn't been to the finals, whatever it is, Jokic is just going to have to, and he is having an incredible season. I think the Nuggets probably have to be a one seed with him putting up the best numbers of his career for him to really.
Well, he's putting up great numbers, but the numbers are comparable the last 2 years.
Right.
So which were MVP.
Well, listen, I mean, if he winds up with a triple double, our esteemed producer Jackson says Larry Bird, Wilt, and Bill Russell are the only ones to do it three times.
There you go.
If you put him up against these other guys, to me, if he finishes the year averaging a triple double, and Denver ends up with the one seed in the West, I think there's a slim path for him to maybe win a third one, depending on what else happens with the field. But again, like you said, McMahon, the history tells you things are going to have to dramatically break in one direction for him to have a realistic shot. As good as he's been awesome.
Part of the reason that his resume was aided the last couple of years was because of the injuries that the Nuggets had. And the Nuggets players, I mean, Porter Jr.'s out at the moment, or he has been. I don't know if he played last night. I missed that.
No, he's not back yet.
Which, by the way, he's Wednesday
been in and out. Jamal's been up and down, you know.
On Wednesday night, the Nuggets scored 98 points in the paint. 49 baskets in the paint.
That's a lot of Jokic is shooting 63% from the floor this year. Less shots than last year, but he's also averaging a career high 9 assists. I mean,
he's on the verge of a triple double every game as a center. I mean, it's bonkers what he's doing.
It was against the Wizards. Now, I went to the Wolves Clippers game, which was one of the ugliest games I've seen in years. The Wolves scored 80 points in that game. The Nuggets scored 98 points in the paint, which I think some folks here at ESPN were telling us it's the most points on record. They didn't always keep points in the paint, so I can't speak for what happened with George Mikan. So Jokic is fifth on 62 ballots. Who is fourth?
And just as a reminder, when we talk about the way things could shift over the year, last year Jokic in the first poll was fourth, and he was on 73 ballots and ended up winning. So the things do shift over time. So fourth place, 6 first place votes, 58 total ballots. Warriors guard, Stephen Curry.
Okay. This is an interesting one. So are you going to tell me, I mean, we have an injury here, which we don't know the results of at this moment.
Right.
Bontemps, I want it. Are you willing to say what you told me when you gave me these results a little while ago?
Let's get to the end. Let's get to the end and talk about that when we have.
I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it right now.
Well, because I don't think it.
It's the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst.
If we do that now, we're going to spoil the rest of it. So let's just wait.
We're
doing this. We're going to spoil the rest of it. We'll get back to it shortly. I think.
All right. Okay.
Defied your orders, Wendy.
That happens all the time.
This is
fourth
the worst
place,
since he called you jackass.
It's not the worst. In fourth place with 58 ballots, for a team that is as of this moment, they're sub 500. Under 500.
They're 14 and 15 after last night's loss in Indy when he got hurt.
As we talk about upwardly mobile, this screams upwardly mobile to me because he's not on ballots, and you would normally, now speaking as the votes were cast, not where we are right now, uncertain about his injury. Normally you would say, geez, because you just said that Jokic went from fourth to first last year.
Right.
Is valuable backstory.
Yeah. What I can say, without giving away the rest of it, I think is because of the way the poll shook out and the fact that Curry was only on 58 ballots, despite the ridiculous season he's been having. If the Warriors can get up into the top 4 or 5 in the West, I think he, right now, is the guy I would pick to win the award if they can get to fourth.
Assuming this injury is not.
Because I think a ton of people are going to have him shoot way up their ballot and maybe to the top of it if they improve in the standings. Like that was the only, like a lot of people said, either when they texted me their votes, either Curry would jump up or Curry would be on my ballot, but the team isn't good enough. And like that, there's enough flexibility in the way the vote shook out that I think he's got, again, we have to say this with the caveat that we don't know what's going on with the shoulder thing. If he's out for 2 months or something, that's a different story.
Right.
But assuming it's a short term deal, I think he's got a huge upward mobility.
Yeah. I'm in that boat. I didn't have Curry on my ballot. And the
reason I was fifth on mine,
I was trying to figure out how to break the line. I just said, I can't take a team I can't put him on there because they're 500. Obviously, if he continues to play great and they would improve as a team, I just think your viewpoint, Bontemps, that Curry was in, and you know, other than the guy who's going to be in first, but Curry was in sort of an advantageous position, sort of had a pathway to winning this, I think is relevant. Career. Like one of your big takeaways from this poll, if I may speak for you, was that you think that while Curry is not leading, he has great growth opportunities.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the, that's I'd say one of the two main ones. The other one we'll get to in a bit.
I actually stand corrected. I did not have Curry on my ballot.
Third place.
Third place, 10 first place votes on 80 of 100 ballots. Guy in McMahon's fine city of Dallas, Mavs star Luka Doncic.
And it's the same argument as Curry. And, you know, the Mavs were above 500 when these ballots were submitted. They're back to 500 now.
And Luka's really also got a little bit more still new kid on the block to him, too.
Well, new kid on the block, thinking about, you know, the numbers, just the pure counting numbers are more impressive.
And also, I think Golden State has been more disappointing from, like, with the general perception of things, whereas Dallas losing Jalen Brunson, right? Everybody sort of expected Dallas to take a step back. The Mavs being a little over 500 isn't as shocking of a thing as the Warriors being 2-13 on the road or whatever.
They're sitting at 500 now. Today got really bad news. Maxi Kleber has a torn right hamstring. Treatment options are being considered, including surgery, which would likely be a season ending type of situation. I mean,
this is, you know, Maxi's not a big name, but he is a massively important player for the Mavs.
He's one of their best defensive players. There's a reason he closes games. It's going to be tough for them to win without him.
Would you say he's their second most important player at this point, McMahon?
I'd have to think about that,
but he's at least in the conversation for that.
Hardaway, when Hardaway shoots really well, that's a pretty
Hardaway's so sure that when and let's be honest, that's we're kind of
sort of the problem with the Mavs,
both
right?
The Mavs' problem and the reason that a mediocre Mavs team still might have an MVP candidate in Luka Doncic is who is their second most important player. Like,
right,
you know, who knows?
Yeah,
I do think there is a floor of being sixth in the standings, right? We've seen Russ at sixth in the standings, we've seen Jokic at sixth in the standings.
Nobody's going to win MVP being in the play-in tournament, barring something truly insane happening.
Russ had extraordinary narrative on his side. Durant walking, averaging the triple double,
all the and all the clutch performances, as we talked about at the time too.
He did win in sixth, but it's I don't know. That's hard one.
Jokic won in six when like the standings were pretty bunched up, and six in the West would have been I forgot what in the East.
That was also the COVID year. That was the first COVID year.
It was
right?
Last year.
Oh, last year they finished sixth?
Yeah, but it was like there was like a two or there was a couple game spread from like second to sixth. And, you know, his numbers were out of control and they had all the injuries.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. Doncic's numbers are bonkers. And obviously, if you watch the Mavericks play for 5 minutes, you see that he, you know, when you argue about the term valuable, he hits that squarely on the nose.
Yeah.
But again, he didn't make my ballot, you know, because I had, you know, Booker and Embiid on it. And the Suns were better at that time. And one of the reasons I did that was, you know, I was just like, it's hard for me to see him winning at that. But torn hamstring is a rare injury. Strained hamstring.
It's a really hamstring, tough one.
Common injury. Torn and hamstring, bad.
Yeah. Well, and as we move up the standings, the other reason that Jokic was able to win last year being a six, even though the standings were a little bit more spread than we thought. It was 48 wins were for Denver in sixth. Golden State was third with 53. The Suns had 64 wins and they had Booker and Chris Paul who kind of split the vote. There wasn't a clear candidate there. The Miami Heat had 53 wins to win the East. There wasn't a clear candidate there. So you sort of need a different combination of things. Obviously we haven't talked about two guys yet. The guy who finished in second with 36 first place votes was on 93 ballots, is on the second best team with record in the league so far. Giannis Antetokounmpo, which means since there's only one guy left, I think we can just say him, with 47 first place votes on 98 ballots and about 80 points ahead of Giannis. Second closest margin of lead so far in a straw poll is Celtic star Jason Tatum.
Who are the ballots that didn't have those guys on? What? Like how? I thought it was interesting. Still, how could you not have those two guys?
So I've done 11 of these polls over the past several years, and this was the first time there wasn't a single player who was a unanimous selection. Oftentimes there's two or three, but this year there were none.
Who was on every ballot, you mean by that?
Yes. Who was selected to every single ballot. Was not the case this year.
Well, it's speaking to the depth of the league. I saw Tatum. I was at the Celtics Laker game the other night where he had 44, the overtime win the Celtics had. I talked to him briefly before the game. You know, he had kind of two off games in a row. They lost to Golden State and then they got whomped by the Clippers the night before. It was the sixth game of their road trip. And it's the first time I'd seen to
historically collapse in that Laker game.
Yes, it was not. It was all in all a good win, but it was not something that I think the Celtics should be a quote unquote proud of the performance. But he was tremendous in being an MVP type player, wanting the last shot in regulation, creating the shot and hitting it. It wasn't totally ideal the way he went about it, but he made the shot. So it's the definition of what an MVP does. You know, before the game, it was the first time I'd seen him this year. I complimented him on how well he was playing this year. And he said, yeah, but I'm really not happy with these last two games. And I really feel like I've got to have a good game tonight. I know that that's not great insight, but what I do think about Tatum is he wants this award. He wants it. I mean, I'm not saying Giannis doesn't, but I think Tatum is going to be, because I think the Celtics, their goals are going to be postseason goals. I think they're going to do just fine in the regular season, but I think Tatum is going to hunt this award a little bit. And I think
I don't think there's any question about that.
So, factor that in. I had Giannis first. The reason I had Giannis first is that number one, Middleton has been out pretty much the whole year. He just came back within the last week. And number two, he is just a shark on defense, and they're the number one defense, and they're as good as they've been on defense during this run, and it's been awesome. But it's very much up in the air for me.
Yeah, I had Giannis first as well, just because I do feel like if you're factoring in both ends of the floor, he is the most dominant player in the NBA. But look, Tatum's a hell of a defender too. I have no problem with him being a top this poll. They've obviously got the best record in the league. And, you know, if you want to argue the defensive thing for Giannis, you can say, yeah, they've got the best defensive team in the league right now. And he's the third best defender on the roster. Brooke Lopez is the defensive player of the year frontrunner right now. Jrue Holiday is, with all due respect to Tatum's teammate Marcus Smart, the best defensive guard in the league. Giannis is a hell of a defender, but it's not like he ain't getting stops by himself there.
Agreed. But he's really good.
he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
And yeah. That's a fair point.
I was surprised Tatum didn't have a bigger lead. When you sort of look at all the headwinds that were behind him at this point, right? They've had the best record. They've had a historically great offense. He's gotten a ton of attention as a result of that, right? I would have thought he would have had a bigger lead, which is not to say he's not going to win. But even though he's in first place, I don't think, you know, when I said I had two main takeaways, the other one I had was that his lead at the top is not really all that secure to me. I do think, you know, there's no reason to think the Celtics are going to fall off a cliff. They're going to get Robert Williams back. That should help them. He could play as soon as, this is going to come out Friday morning. He could play as soon as Friday night when they play Orlando at home. They come back from the six-game road trip. He'll certainly help a ton. But if you'd have told me that Tatum was averaging over 30 a game, the Celtics had the best record in the NBA, and he had a lot of narrative reasons for him to be at the top of the ballot, and he, you know, the only gap that's smaller between first and second in any of these I've done was last year when basically Embiid and Jokic were tied in the second one. I would have been pretty surprised. So I know people will see Tatum in first place and think he's the clear runaway leader to win the award. I don't think that's the case at this point. Well, not saying he won't win it, but I don't think it's as clear cut as it might look.
You know, they're in first place, but they lead the Bucks by a game.
Right.
And Giannis is averaging more points, more rebounds, more assists. I do think he makes more of an impact defensively. Again, not that Tatum doesn't make an impact defensively, but I think Giannis, a former defensive player of the year, makes more of an impact. But, you know, I think
very well right may now, just come down to which one of those two guys has a better record ultimately.
Yeah. And then who of our quote unquote upwardly mobile guys can make the strongest case. And, you know, we're sitting here right now, the Sixers are 15-12, six games back. If the Sixers, you know, storm their way up to getting that, that territory of the standings, Joel Embiid, who's right now leading the league in scoring, is certainly going to have a case to be made. You know, we talked about Zion, we talked about Moran as far as teams that are leading the West. It will be interesting to see if Denver ends up as the number one seed in the Western Conference, and right now they're only a game back. And Jokic, I think we can assume if that's the case, Jokic is putting up absolutely mind-blowing numbers.
You know, actually, Denver grades out in terms of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a lot of road games, and the Doug Moe standings, which is you subtract, you take road wins and subtract home losses, and it generates a number. The more positive you are, the Celtics are number one in it, which they're number one in everything. But Denver's number two, which is it's a good way, like, until like January, February, to get a good idea, because there's variance in schedules and, you know, who's gone on big road trips.
Denver's played less home games than any team in the league other than Houston, and they're a game out of first in the West. Like, if you're if we're talking something different, we're handicapping who's going to win first in the West, my guess is Denver has the best record in the West at the end of the season.
Well, right now, if you did an adjusted schedule, if you adjusted the standings for the difficulty of the schedule, Denver might be number one. All right. So Bontemps, thank you for doing that. You've got Tatum number one.
Yeah. Well, just one Hold thing. On. I just want, all right, go ahead.
I do want to talk a little about Steph Curry here and the Warriors.
I wanted to say one more thing about the poll real quick, just to give people a quick highlight. So I went and looked. So in the first poll last year, at the start of the year, Joel Embiid had one single fifth place vote in the first poll. Luka had four fifth place votes in the first poll. Booker had 10 votes in the first poll. And those guys all finished in the top five in voting, and Embiid was not far off winning. So just as a reminder that, like, even though if somebody might only have a handful of votes right now, it's a long way between now and the end of the season, and things can shift a lot.
Okay, we stopped the actually finished the podcast, and the rest of the podcast will be lost to history. There was an incredible argument that took place between me, Bontemps, and McMahon. Once again, McMahon and Bontemps teamed up on me, and after a long debate, we decided, just kidding. We have a Steph Curry update.
He's kidding. It was not a long debate. Wendy got his feelings hurt, and he's allowed to censor this podcast. That's what happened.
We got a Steph Curry update, decided to come back. So it's a couple hours later. It's now, what day is today? Thursday afternoon. First though, we wanted to do some trivia. So Bontemps, you had trivia. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
time for Hoop Collective Trivia.
Got two brief Steph Curry-related questions. The first is, when he's on the court, offensive rating 118.9 for Golden State. When he is on the bench, offensive rating of 99.9, which is pretty bad these days. It has been several years since a team has finished the season with an under 100 offensive rating for the season. Who was the last team to do that?
So the truth is that we already did this trivia question.
I was giving you a chance to actually get one right.
I know. And so McMahon has wiped my backside with the trivia, including
I will never
on
wipe your backside
with the trivia. And so I will gladly say that, although I was pretty close the first time, I didn't get it exactly right. I was pretty close. Mm-hmm.
It's one of the, I forgot which one. It's one of the process 76.
Yes, teams. I got, yeah. You had another guess.
It was the final process Sixers team, the 2015-16 Sixers team.
The process. Yeah,
And in a related trivia question.
Ooh, a fresh trivia question.
Since the merger, what in 76-77, what is the most games a player has missed and won MVP?
I think you mentioned
Who was the player who missed the most games? I should say instead. You're not going to get the actual specific
number
of games.
And one MVP.
Right? You said it was 11, right? 11 games was the most missed?
There's one player that's missed more than 11 games in the last 45 years and won MVP.
Bill Walton?
Bill Walton is the answer. Who is the player who missed 11 games? There's one player who's missed. There's two players who missed more than 10. Bill Walton missed 24 in 78 when his team was 50-10. One other player missed 11 and won.
Nash?
Nash is not the answer.
Wasn't Joker last year, was it? With all the COVID stuff?
Nope. He missed 10, I believe, last year.
Hmm.
He missed 8, actually, not 10.
All right, I'm gonna cheat a little bit just by looking at a list of MVP winners.
I'll just say Jordan, because...
You got a pretty good chance, right?
Yeah, I'm just making I don't know. Go ahead.
I'll give you one more guess, Grant, if you have a quick one.
I'm struggling here to get the MVP.
All right, well, the answer to move us along is Allen Iverson, who missed 11 games in 2001 for a team that had the best record in the West. And as I think we're about to get into, I would say our conversation with Steph earlier, I would say his MVP chances are pretty much cooked given where Golden State is in the standings and the fact that he's going to be missing some time here.
Well, not just that he's missing time, but where they are in the standings now and where we anticipate they will be once he comes back. Although they might not drop many spots because there's not too many to drop. But I think when you're talking about games under 500, I think it's going to be extremely unlikely the Warriors finish above 500 at this point.
So we still don't really know how long he's going to be out for. What it looks like is that he avoided surgery, at least in the initial diagnosis. So that is a win for the Warriors, to be honest with you, because I was a little worried about that when I first saw it. So I'm going to just say short term here. They are 2-13 on the road. They have 4 games left on this road trip at Philly, right? At Philly, at Brooklyn, at New York. And there's one more, and I can't remember.
And Toronto, at Toronto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At Toronto.
How many are they winning? How many? They're 2-13. How many are they winning on this road trip?
Without Steph, probably none.
I mean, I think if they manage to win 2, they'd be thrilled.
Okay, let's split the difference. Let's say they go 1-3 on the rest of this road trip. That means they come back at 15-18. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's not good.
Well, I mean, let's say Steph misses 3 weeks, right? I'm looking at the schedule now. That's 10 games. I mean, if optimistically they can win
3 weeks, might be optimistic, to be honest.
I know.
But okay.
Now I'll say this: in those 3 weeks, there is a Charlotte on the schedule, although they lost at Charlotte this year. There is an Atlanta, which has a long list of its own problems. Detroit is exactly 3 weeks out. But, man.
Well, look, if you go a month from now, they'll have played 14 games. Okay? If you go 6 weeks from now, go to the end of January, they'll have played 20 games. What's the realistic outcome if he misses 15 to 20 games? What the record is, like 5-15? I mean, I think if they could go somewhere between 8-10 wins in that stretch, I think they're thrilled. But we've seen how horrible they've been without him. I think it's realistic they win 4 or 5 games. And if they do that, then you're talking about them being somewhere in the neighborhood of, 18-30 at that point.
I think they'll do better than that because I think that they'll focus a little bit more. And I also think that Jordan Poole, we ran the numbers on NBA Today. He's averaging 10 more points a game as a starter, as a reserve, and he's going to get that. So there'll be a step down. I've been calling him the understudy to Steph. There'll be a step down, but it's not going to be a catastrophic step down.
The key there, though, is that when he's starting, he's pretty much always playing next to Steph.
That's true.
It's a pretty significant difference. That's a
good point. I agree.
I'm pulling up lineups quick to see what their lineups are when Steph's not out there with Poole, and I have a suspicion it's going to be pretty ugly.
Well, the problem is that they're under 500 now, and they've got this brutal road trip. You know, if they come back, 15-18, even if they play close to 500 while Steph's gone, it's still not a good position to be in.
I mean, and they're not going to play close to 500 with Steph out. They're 0-3 without him this year, and our folks from Stats and Info are providing me this number: 67-133 without him. Since his rookie year.
Oh.
I mean, come on, dude. And that was with some dynasty teams in the mix. Yeah. Let's say 67-133.
I mean, any road game, I don't care if they play the easiest 4 road games in the league. You can't give them anything on the road right now.
No, so, they've lost all sorts of bad teams.
I mean, 2-30.
They've lost
all sorts of
bad teams.
I looked a year ago. They were 25-4 at the 29 game mark. Now they're 14-15. And that's kind of like the biggest difference is that there's no margin for error. I mean, in years past, you lose Steph, even if their record was below 500. I mean, the one year they tanked that season.
Right.
So that has inflated, that number. But it's, I don't know, man. It makes you wonder, there's just not a lot of trades out there right now. I don't know. I'm sure they're having a bunch of meetings and they're all on the road, and I'm sure they're having a bunch of meetings trying to plot something out here. It's a tough hand right now, but it is only December. And it's not a huge season-ending injury, and the season is long enough, and the West is relatively weak enough. There were years where if you didn't win 52 games, you weren't making the playoffs. That won't be the case this year. So that's their one advantage, is that they're
I mean, that's true, but right now they're in 10th place in the West going into Friday night or Thursday night's action, right? They're half a game ahead of Minnesota, and they're 2 games ahead of the Lakers. Like, I certainly was not anticipating them being in a position where they were going to be fighting to get into the play-in. But if they do struggle to the way they have without Steph to this point, and they do go, let's say he misses 20 games and they go 5-15, or even if he misses 15 games and they go, 4-11 or something. I mean, they could be in a position where they're 4, 5, 6 games out of the play-in when he comes back. And maybe they can salvage it and get in, but they have not shown to this point in the season they're capable of playing a lot better than 500-ish ball. So if they don't make any real dramatic changes or they don't significantly upgrade their second unit, I think you could look at a scenario where this potentially knocks them out of the playoffs.
All right, I'm not ready to go there yet. I'm just going to wait and see. I think Poole will play better. Wiggins will score more. I'm not counting him out. I will say this, though. If you're a Laker fan, this is really helpful. I'm going to say the Lakers, I was very dubious about what this team was going to be. My thought on where they can go has increased a little bit because They are playing better than I thought, and they are defending better than I thought. You know, they have a very tough rest of this month, but if they beat the Nuggets on Friday, which they maybe they will, maybe they won't, but they're going to be home. They will have gone through a very difficult stretch, 4-4. If they go through the rest of December at 500 and they've got a company, they've got a tough, it's a lot of road games, but they've got a couple of games with Charlotte in there, who's now the worst team in the league, apparently, or at least the worst team in the East, I should say. I think the Lakers have a shot at crawling back towards 500 in the next month. And in the next month, the Warriors are probably not going to be 500. So, like, one of the things we're looking at is how the Lakers are going to get up there. We're trying to judge who they could pass. We're wondering whether Utah is going to stay. Well, one of the teams
Minnesota's got plenty of its own problems, which is right above the Lakers in the standings.
Yeah.
The Mavericks have some problems. You know, we talked about the impact of Maxi Kleber being out indefinitely for a 500 team that depends heavily on his defense.
I mean, how many wins is Maxi Kleber worth in the next 2 months?
Well, you're probably at least a couple.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just know that they close games with him on the floor because that's how important he is to their defense.
Yeah.
I mean, that is and that is the one thing from a Warriors perspective where you can look at it and say the bottom of the West is much, like you said, much softer than in the past. So maybe they can stay in contact. But, you know, I do think it also from a Laker perspective, you know, if you're looking for reasons, if you're the Lakers, you're looking for reasons to try to make moves to get better. This is one thing that is probably going to give them a push. I don't know if it's a prudent one, but it's one thing that could give them more of a push to try to be more competitive this year too.
Do you make aggressive moves to solidify your status as a play-in team?
Oh, listen, I didn't say it's what I would do, but if they are sitting in ninth or 10th place and they end up five games up on 11th, I think it's more likely that they do something than if they're five games out in 11th instead, you know, like I do think it at least could potentially swing it that way. Hmm. If you're a team trying to find a reason to do something in the first place.
I'm hearkening back to Rudy Tomjanovich. Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
You're saying never underestimate the heart of a bubble champion?
I'm talking about the Warriors.
Oh, okay.
I understand the doom and gloom, but I'm going to stay back from the edge. They still have a lot going for them.
The West is wide open, and like we talked about earlier, even if it does knock Steph out of the MVP race, if they do make upgrades of their second unit, I do think there's no reason to look at the West and think that this team can't be a championship caliber team if he's healthy the rest of the way. And they even if they are in the play-in, like if they improve that second unit, their starting lineup, I was looking at it before, they're still like plus 24 per 100 possessions. Yeah. Plus 23 per 100 possessions with their starting five. Like they've proven over the course of the season that they're top end is really good. So
that's still the best five-man lineup with, I forget the exact minimum minutes requirement there, but that's the best, like, decent usage starting lineup in the NBA still. And they're a game under 500.
Yeah. It's the second most used lineup in the league. They're plus 23. Like, they have the ability to compete at the highest level, but they have to try to make moves to improve that second unit. And again, this goes back to McMahon's point earlier. If you're already hesitant about giving up on some of these young players, most notably James Wiseman, whose value's at his nadir, are you going to do that when you're 12 games under 500 at the trade deadline? Like, nadir, you know.
I was just thinking, like, boy, Bontinch really threw out a vocab word. What was that, like on the Wordle recently or something? That is a five-letter one, right?
I just like to improve your vocabulary. Whenever I get the chance, buddy, it's what
whenever
I'm here
I improve
for.
Your vocabulary, it's usually with four letter words, not five.
That is certainly true.
He knew nadir was a five letter word. That's
he did. Cool. That's right. Yeah. We're making progress.
N-A-T-E-R.
All right. Thank you. Listen to Hoop Collective Podcast. Hopefully Steph is back sooner rather than later. Kind of a bummer news today. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you, Bontemps, for the Bontemps poll. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. We'll be talking to everybody next week.
The Bontemps straw poll BS. Adios, amigos.
That wasn't part of the sign-off.